He learned of the death of his father and was unmoved in the steady drizzle of a rainy season night on reclaimed land in Tokyo, Japan. Lights of shops lit halos of soft, wet red, yellow, and blue, like electric sculptures in the humid air. He was smooth before he learned, and his mood was already tired from stifling days spent working with no travel plans in sight for want of more money. The rain gave him more calm. Slow down, slow and tired, life wound down drains and cities, droning on with nary a distinctive sound, like rain falling in the center of the Pacific Ocean. He had been trying to think of writing a book. Someday we will all die. Thoughts like that made him prepared from way back for the news he was about to receive. He had yet to get back in touch with his own soul, though he had been trying to in a way, and certain improvised music he sought out in Tokyo approached the natural harmony of a gentle anarchy that was like some ideal to him, an ideal for living held deep somewhere where his soul was hiding, calling to it like Ali Ali Oxenfree. His own father had been dwelling there like a rock inside of him, but he had yet to connect with his true thoughts of him, and not the revised, romanticized version that comes with packs and backpacks and memories whenever you travel far from home. The lights of shops and yatais looked like halos over sleepy heads and old paintings. There was no movement of air, only humidity and wet people returning home as silent as ghosts, only the whirl of their bikes as they split the station. He wanted to run away to Manila and have children, have a wedding with an awesome soundtrack, wearing linens and seersuckers and straw hats like the 20s, and get rich and live on a big plantation on an island. He was calm. This is where it all started. On this one super day in an old bedroom town of Philadelphia with nothing but blue skies and old leafy trees and cracks and tree roots and grass on sidewalks in a suburb in which one of my big sister's friends from Tyler lived. My sister had to visit because this girl was just back from London where she'd been hanging out with the Sex Pistols, and she brought one of them home. I was a little boy and my sister was a sophomore at Tyler. I was the little Filipino-American boy of the late 70s, into fishing, aquariums, turtles, and army. She drove the Ford Country Squire down, and she brought me along. My sister, her friend, and the Sex Pistols took their leisure, reclining in lawn chairs at the lip of the front yard before the sidewalk, sipping drinks. I laid back on my elbows in the grass at their feet and listened because they were old. The lawn needed cut. My sister's friend was a flake. Her house was a normal. But it was an awesome set for this pistol's welcome into the bosom of eastern Pennsylvania. There were kids riding bikes around the neighborhood. Somewhere a lawnmower was going. It was afternoon. The pistol sipped American iced tea from a frosted suburban mug. He was polite whenever he spoke, but he was fucked up. He slouched their limp like a dirty shirt thrown over a chair in a bedsit on the grayest day in England. But he was hanging out on a lawn chair on a carless road underneath a hot, sunlit sky in a suburb of Philadelphia on a weekday afternoon, so it all seemed healthy and good. And my sister had new wave hair of varying colors. They were two sisters in the late 70s and early 80s, daughters of a 60s marriage that contained such things as terry cloth tenniswear, Dallas episodes, Genesee in cans, big sunglasses, and family trips cross-country in a Subaru wagon, like a scene in a 70s movie in a desert in hot southwest sun, and divorce. She was wise and resigned at the age of 20 and glowed steadily with something bright inside her, like from her heart or her crotch or both together. There was a halo above her head that shone lavender, yellow, blue on soft spring evenings. I was lucky to meet her. There is that memory of walking through a dreary day in this tropical verdant city, or one of its verdant pockets therein. It was raining. We had come upon each other, me coming and her going, she beneath a cool umbrella in really cool clothes, tasteful hip clothes. She was beautiful. She tipped her umbrella forward to me. It was like a protected space, her personal space, into which I was allowed entry and enveloped for one dry, warm second beneath her umbrella. And beneath her umbrella, she looked up at me and smiled and said hello, then kept going without almost breaking her stride. That's one second of my life I completely cherish, and I'm unwilling to allow the memory of disappear with age and the accumulation of more mundane memories. And there are many others. We hung our feet off rooftops above the bay. The afternoon ocean breeze kissed the foam shore below. I'd been the angry sun. I had burned bridges to stay warm. I had lit out across autumn cornfields to run the fuck away. And at what a price to pay. It was the red wine emo. It blossomed out of dead, tired scenes. Summer was gone. Wormwood, milkweed, and milk thistle. Everything had died and fell fallow and stupid. Summer had left us dry with nothing left to try, but this time. We had pulled off a financial crime of massive proportions. It had been exceedingly easy. It involved fake social security numbers and a mail drop in an old woody village high in the bamboo hills of the island of Formosa. I remember the very moment this life-saving lump sum rolled over into our dummy account. We had been drinking red wine. The first breeze of Indian summer was in the air. We were shocked at the amount. We felt light, as in light as a feather as well as light as in faint. The realization of how suddenly we could literally do anything we wanted that had previously been so horribly impossible came to us like an electrocution. Emmanuel grew quiet. She sat down on the couch and said, "Oh my God." I looked at her with an uncontrollable, unstoppable smile and said yes, over and over. Then I sat right down on the floor. My legs were about to fail me. We looked across the room at each other, then at the glowing laptop on the table by the window. There it was, a magnificent figure that could not be denied. The late afternoon sun, quiet and warm and orange, slanted in our windows and stepped across our floor like the thick leg of a giant, trying to angle himself into our home through our second-story window. The shortwave released the sad, sad voice of Bessie Smith into the dusty air of our room. Birds called to one another over the street below. I thought of a beach in an orange twilight glow, such just like this one, right now, on the bottom of a globe in the middle of the warm and blue and impossibly expansive sea. I could hear the fan in the other room. I was suspicious we hadn't really pulled it off, but at the same time, I felt like we had been waiting forever for our store. I mean, what the fuck took so long? Farm Show 1968. It was May. Trolleys slipped clattering up and down rails on Baltimore and Chester. Time was suspended. The tape hissed out of old, old speakers. The house smelled of rot. It was late afternoon. Black children called to one another like birds out the window in the park. There was nothing but failure to do and laziness. The air was dusty. It felt like humidity and unemployment. West Philly teetered forward in complete entropy all around them. There was a trash strike that spring. The city smelled like Bangkok, like sweet shit, antifreeze, and the sweat of the people commingled. What could possibly be their redemption within such a dour scene? Everyone was fucked. And the sun blew in the window, about to set over the King-Sessing Hills, and Rastafarians and squatters walked down Baltimore to the co-op, and the leaves on the trees were green with youth. It was the 20th anniversary of Paris 68. The endless days of dirty Bangkok rain started killing my spirit. Emmanuel was gone. I was alone. I walked slowly from room to room. I looked about not seeing. It was humid. I was alone like a writer. Cooking was stupid. The apartment was sticky with humidity. It smelled of damp and wood. The only sounds I heard were car tires cutting through puddles in the mad street below. My spirit was gone like the sun. All this time, I am a writer who is never writing. I resolved to put down the cigarette in between my index and middle finger, get some screwdrivers, and fix my typewriter. I looked across the room at the thing, then out the window, then back to the old metal typewriter. It was broken and unused. My body felt stiff and old. The soft pad between my vertebrae up and down my spine had turned to dry chips of brittle metal that cracked when I turned this way and that. My eyeglasses were scratched. I had a pain in my neck. The rainy days had made me a boring sack of creaky bones. I was dehydrated. I resolved to drink more water. And I thought about, what the fuck, where had my wealth gone? The winter was coming and it was time to split and feel the distance between myself and society. It was a bright January day. Somehow he had been feeling deceived, this ancient entrepot that surrounded him like castle walls. The sun blew up the bare facades of old buildings in slow flaxen light, like they were baking in a child's easy bake oven. The fan in the window was blowing an invisible river of air over the sun puddle in the center of the room, the cat sleeping in it, onto the empty chair in the northwest corner of the room. That chair was empty now. From where he was sitting, his vision cut a perpendicular of light through the dusty light. From where he was sitting, his vision cut a perpendicular of sight through the dusty light at a 90-degree angle. He looked out the window to the fields and the little town beyond them, and to the bamboo mountains beyond the city. He could hear the train sliding east and west on the rail system far off along the bottom of the hill, coming and going out into and out of the fucked-up old station. The air was crisp, but felt of the fish sauce factory in town. He could see the white caps on the ocean at a 45-degree angle to his right, far, far off above the rotted roofs of buildings, frothing up and at him on the horizon, with tiny blinding points of light reflecting off them like they were stalking him and waiting for him. This ancient entrepot that surrounded him like castle walls, like ring upon ring of previous cultures, was damp and crumbling and patinaed green with mold and age. It had already surrounded hosts of other lost souls for centuries. It was exhausted and soft. It was nothing like a gated community. It was like a rotting tooth, but one that did not hurt or was even almost benign somehow. He reclined for hours, smoking Chinese cigarettes and not thinking particularly of anything. Like an opium prince surrounded by royal drapes. It was a beautiful January day. people walked and talked together in the street below, or practiced Tai Chi together in the park below. It was quiet. From above and out the window, Macau looked like a giant and splendid and baked and old feast just pulled from a warming oven. The snow had fallen overnight and covered Tokyo. The street was still. It was as if it had been silent forever. There was no one around. The morning arrived as usual, suddenly. I watched from the window the blanket of snow and the stillness. Where had everything gone? What happened to the sound of this messy city? Where were the computers that weren't on their way to the train? Was there no one left on the planet but I? I made more coffee. I drank it at the window. I was waiting to see someone or something. I smoked cigarettes and inhaled smoke into the morning air through a just open crack in the window. The window was dirty. It was an old house. My ass grew cold on its stool from air running in when I blew smoke out. My forehead against the window pane grew cold. My hand and my cheeks and lips moved. It was like I was pinned there on my sit bones. All around me, I was the only thing moving at all, but I hadn't really moved. The coffee I had brewed was from the local organic food shop. I knew the girl who worked there at the register, bored-looking and expectant-looking and always looking at you. She exchanged pleasantries with me every time I walked there for food. The coffee, with a bit of soy milk and a ring around the mug of deep propolis wax, tasted warm and brown, like a spot forgotten to be removed, surrounded by clean, crisp white all around. I thought about that, warm browns in different places in the wide, wide world, separated by clean, crisp expanses of nothing. I would eventually move and make something to eat soon, that was my thought. The simple fact must have been that everyone was in their kitchens, in their pajamas, drinking coffees and making breakfast, and feeling warm because there was no way to work or school today, or errands or vices. The snowstorm that came like an angel overnight had offered everyone an escape route from their daily boring bullshit. All those people stuck inside bright kitchens with their kids or lovers, unable to leave the front door, unable to go to work or school, unable to get to the hospital if they had to, if their husbands suffered sudden avenging heart attacks. I smoked cigarettes and cooked two eggs with green onions diced over them and soy sauce drizzled from above. I felt warmed and light, as if there were a new generator deep down in my abdomen where the coffee had been swallowed down to, shooting a tractor beam of magnetism up my spine through each chakra, out my dome, right through the center of my head. I was pulled straight up as if a hook had been gently threaded through my scalp and its line had levered me skyward in perfect posture. It was a fine, fine morning. The eggs and coffee conjoined in my guts and stoked my radiant heater. My ass grew cold from circulation again, and my forehead heated up like an eye opening wide. I wanted to be pulled through the roof and straight up into the blue sky like a star. Like a reverse shooting star. all my poverty-stricken friends. All my poverty-stricken friends are flawed or something, or shaky in the world, or lack that thing that lets all the dorks you pass not think about the world, or what's your deal. Grow up, hold up in apartments in this city. All my poverty-stricken friends in this underground, Philly knows now sound, soul town, downtown, uptown, Coweta, West Philly, and all around. The Grangerfords take me in. Sleepy jump in Red Clay River, Rio Grande, on a hush Monday morning in Albuquerque. Wave like Nick Adams, chest high in currents, cross shaky sands from the Continental Divide to the Cut Bank. Flop over rusty silt, muddy sandbars where they got adobe bricks, and swing your eyes and cup your brow and look to your lover down river to her thighs, her back to the southwest sun and sigh. The Seattle sludge sound. All the hollows that hide a Bigfoot in the piney hills of evergreen clean northwest scenes, I wind down weathered railroad tracks to hike in Sasquatch land. Lost and late for the show. I shove a Bro Press edition of Satori in Paris down my pants and ask the fucking bearded dullard for a job. On a tattery seat sitting in sun through windows of West Philly, you could just fail out of school again like some Henry Miller kid. And no rules of this world can govern my soul. No laws of this land can restrain my hand, nothing stopping the want of my short pants. People should demand beauty. I walk down ridge like Edward Hopper's eyes, or slosh Chianti with a long-armed tall girl by my side, to moon blue light West Philly spring night. Stop, smoke butts on South Street Bridge, and gaze to your town against the sky. Here come the nights. Get to late night wine stores in the heart of London town. Slide past limey squat pump dealers to Jamaica kids for hash. Lick a cool sweat and hide the pop in your cheek. You can be deported real quick. Cling to cool sights in London town, summer nights so far off and free to lie and drug and be anything you please. Past wide-eyed, lonely women in furs, their leggy daughters got fine flats in Chelsea for the night. Thank you.
Thank you.